I am Planta on the line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Adam Difallo joins me again, the public affairs consultant, lawyer, academic, and journalist, joins me from Montreal, Quebec, a province painted orange in last night's federal election. We'll ask Mr. Difallo what happened, what accounts for Jack Layton and the NDP's success, what happened to the Liberal Party of Canada across the country, and how Stephen Harper got his majority. 6 years ago, Adam Difallo was on this program to talk about a book he co-authored with Tasha Carradine, Rescuing Canada's Right Blueprint for a Conservative Revolution. It's apt to talk to him now and see what's happened since. Mr. Difallo is a senior partner at MRCNR Strategy Advisors, a Montreal firm. He lectures at McGill and appears on occasion in the National Post, where he was once a member of their editorial board. The websites for more, is at difallo.com and mrcnr.net. Please welcome back to the Planta Online program, Adam Difallo. Good morning, Mr. Difallo.
Hi, Joseph. Good to be here.
Thanks for joining us. Were any of these, I guess there were four students from McGill that were elected as part of the NDP's seats in Quebec, were they ever in your class?
No. It's funny you should ask that. I just put something up on Twitter to that effect.
Oh, really?
None of those students ever took my course on the history of the conservative movement.
Hmm.
If they had, they might not have run for that party. I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
No, I don't know them.
Yeah. What happened last night in Quebec, and just about Mr. Layton and the success of the NDP there?
Mm-hmm. Well, Joseph, I think there's probably going to be some pretty interesting PhD theses written on this topic over the next few years, because it's very difficult to decipher exactly what happened or why. I think it's probably a confluence of different things. Jack Layton and the campaign that he ran obviously attracted a lot of voters. Jack, his personality was appealing, especially in contrast with the two other major party leaders, Harper and Ignatieff. There was fatigue with the Bloc Québécois here. I think people had started to realize that it wasn't really able to accomplish much in Ottawa, and Duceppe ran sort of a tired, you know, visionless campaign, and I think really took a lot for granted. There was a sense that I wouldn't say that it was a conversion to federalism, or that people were giving up on sovereignty, which is what some English-Canadian commentators have been saying today, but I think there is a sense that Quebec ought to at least play some sort of role in the governance of the country. Now, you could say by voting for the NDP they didn't do that, but at least they voted for a party that's capable of forming a government at some point. So in an indirect way, at least, they did.
What did Layton promise to Quebecers?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really good question, because there's been a lot of misunderstanding about that. As I've been trying to say to anybody who will listen, he will say different things in French than he says in English. A common question from people who don't follow Quebec politics or don't speak French is, how could a polity like Quebec's, which is one that asks for decentralization and more power, endorse the policies of the most centralizing political party on the political scene, the NDP? But what they don't know is that when Layton is speaking in French and when he's doing campaign events in Quebec, he's using nationalist rhetoric. He doesn't use the same rhetoric as he uses in the other provinces. He talks about more power to Quebec to govern its own affairs. He talks about protection of the French language. He talks about having the French language charter, which is known as Bill 101, apply to federally regulated workplaces. He even talks about opening up the Constitution. So he's playing a different game in Quebec. I personally think it's dangerous, but it was politically smart, and obviously it worked.
And so he's got to wrestle now with this big caucus, and I guess half or more than half come from Quebec. Do you think he'll do well with that, and at the end of the 4 years, do you think that we'll have the caucus as one, or do you think it'll splinter at all, or...?
It's tough to say at this point, Joseph, but he, the danger is certainly there if he doesn't handle it well, because we don't know who these people are in many cases. There's been different reports out about some of them being students, some of them not even being in the riding during the campaign. It's going to be a mixed group of people, although this is a common occurrence when a smaller party does well, because a lot of people agree to put their name on the ballot just as a favor. So it'll be difficult to manage. The NDP's never had any significant representation from Quebec before. They've only had one MP at the most since their existence, since the beginning of the party's existence. So it's going to be a major challenge for him to keep all those interests united. And the NDP, I should say, was already two parties. It was the big city NDP, I guess we could call it, with the young left, anti-globalization, those types of forces, and kind of the agrarian rural NDP of BC and Saskatchewan, of more of the small town, more traditional values, but socially democratic on economic issues NDP. Now we have a third wing of the NDP, which is going to be the Quebec caucus, presumably quite nationalist and left-wing NDP. So he really has three groups to keep together, and it won't be easy.
So you mentioned earlier that sovereignty isn't dead. We shouldn't underestimate that. What could prompt its, its rise again?
Well, you can already see if you saw Gilles Duceppe's concession speech last night, I think you already got a glimpse of the rhetoric and the tack that the sovereignist movement is going to take on this, which is the NDP has promised the world to Quebec. They've promised to defend Quebec's interests. They've promised to promote French. They've promised to open the Constitution. And if they fail, then all of the Federalist parties will have failed to appease Quebec's demands because they've already written off the Tories and the Liberals.
Mm-hmm.
So Leighton, in a sense, has to show that he can be effective for Quebec and effective at advancing Quebec's interests if he wants to do this well again next time. But something that could set off the sovereignty movement again is this isn't so much related to the NDP, but if the federal government were to do something that was seen to be completely against Quebec's interest or totally out of sync with Quebec's values, and the Liberals, NDP, and the rump of the Bloc in the House were all vehemently opposed, and the Conservatives did it anyway, then you could see these sorts of cleavages and divisions coming about. So there's not one specific issue that I can think up off the top of my head, but I foresee a situation in which the entire opposition plus the provincial government of Quebec opposes something major at the federal level, pitting everyone against the Tories, and that could be dangerous.
How is Pauline Marois in the Parti Québécois doing in Quebec at the moment?
Well, they're doing well in the polls, but it's essentially because there's no one else. Jean Charest is very unpopular. He's had a lot of setbacks. The ADQ has gone through a very difficult time, although is making a sincerely good comeback, I think, and are positioning themselves to be serious players again. But I think Marois is leading in the polls just by default more than anything else. But there's a sentiment in Quebec that something has to change and something could change. So there's an opening for someone to come in that door. I don't know if it's the ADQ or another smaller political party that could start up, but there's a longing for change here, and whoever best manifests that sentiment in the next provincial election, they'll win. It could be the PQ, but if I had to bet, I would say it wouldn't be.
So last night, a Conservative majority government was elected. Was that because the country sort of moved to the right, do you think, or just because of the Liberal vote sort of collapsed?
I think it's a combination of both, but more the latter. I think the country has moved to the right slightly under Harper, mainly because of the changes in rhetoric that he's brought about, focusing on traditional values, on our historical values, promoting the military, promoting family, those types of things. But it was more that Harper was just facing opponents that just didn't connect. I mean, Leighton obviously did in Quebec, but outside of Quebec, the NDP didn't do that well. They got 8 seats more than they had previously. But Leighton aside, Ignatieff and Duceppe were just both complete disasters in this campaign, and Harper benefited from that, much in the same way that Chrétien did when he won his 3 majorities. He never faced a really strong, charismatic, and popular opposition leader, and I think that's half the battle in winning an election, is just outperforming your opponents.
So was this something that was expected? I mean, there were some people who called for saying that a majority was... I mean, Jerry Nichols was on this program saying that there'd be a majority.
Yeah.
But it was not really... I mean, the polls suggested otherwise, right?
Yeah, there was another pollster who was calling for a majority, Conrad Wynn at Compass. But most pollsters were saying a minority. I was saying slim majority towards the end. I didn't think it would be as large as it is. I thought the high 150s. And I thought that the Liberals and the NDP would get about the same number of seats, just because I didn't expect the NDP to have any kind of get-out-the-vote operation. But it was a phenomenon, it was a wave, and when you have that kind of a situation, like the ADQ at the provincial level in Quebec in 2007, when you have that kind of phenomenon, you don't need get-out-the-vote. It just happens by itself. So I think it was suspected in some circles, or at least the possibility of a Tory majority was on the minds of people, but most people thought it would be a minority.
So the state of the Liberal Party today, I mean, it seems like the state of the Progressive Conservatives in 1993. What would you suggest to someone who wanted to write a book, say, Rescuing Canada's Liberal Party?
Yeah, great question. I'm of the view that the Liberals did not properly utilize what I call the wilderness years, the time that they've been out of power, to really rejuvenate and renew. The Tories did that. They split into two parties, and then they spent the next, you know, 5 or 6 years after the original division in 93, sort of getting back together, having conferences, thinkers' conferences, and then the Unite the Right campaign from Preston Manning, the two Unite the Right conventions, and then the eventual merger with McKay and Harper. The Liberals have not taken this approach. Some of them have been in denial. Some of them have felt that they were temporarily out of power because of the sponsorship scandal, that they were just in the penalty box for a few minutes and then that they'd come out and everything would be back to normal. There were some signs that they had gotten the message last year when they did this Canada 150 conference in Montreal that brought together Liberal thinkers and tried to bring up new ideas and get some more discussion of ideology and philosophy inside the party started again, but it was really just window dressing. I attended it, and it wasn't as serious and as deep as I thought it would be. So a book about how to rejuvenate the Liberals would have to talk about a fundamental reconception, I think, and a rethinking of what the Liberal Party is, what it means, and what it means to be a Liberal, and what it is to be left of center today. And there's obviously a major disconnect between them and the people. And you can't put aside also the leadership issue. I think if you have a good leader, you can overcome a lot of policy deficiencies, but their last two, and arguably three, if you include Paul Martin, leaders have just not connected with voters at all.
What about having Stéphane Dion as the leader of the Liberal Party again? I mean, he was reelected last night, wasn't he?
Yes, he was.
Yeah.
I just think that's a no-go. I think they'll look to somebody probably from the next generation, if it's not Bob Rae. Somebody from outside politics or outside the current caucus, or somebody younger like a Dominic LeBlanc or a Justin Trudeau.
I asked my MP, Don Davies, an NDP MP, when he was on this program last week, that if Mr. Harper won a victory on Monday night, whether it be a minority government or a majority government, would that mean that whatever ethical trespasses he might have committed were forgiven? He said he didn't know. Do you think last night's victory, last night's result, means that the Canadian people aren't particularly concerned with whatever the opposition was saying before the election?
Yeah, I think that's exactly what it is. I don't think those were ever serious issues. I said on the first day of the campaign that the contempt motion that was passed in the House that really caused this election would be forgotten after the first day, and it essentially was. You know, we can argue whether it's right or wrong, but voters do not seem to really care that much about those issues. At least they haven't when it comes to Harper. Whether that's because they don't think they're serious offenses or not, or they're just willing to overlook them, or they're concerned with other issues, or I don't know the reason. But they didn't seem to resonate, and I think last night's result shows that it just wasn't a top-of-mind thing for the median voter.
I've mentioned the book that you and Tasha wrote 6 years ago now, and I pulled my copy off of the shelf. Is everything that you suggested, that you guys suggested in this book, did Harper and the Conservatives heed the advice that you gave?
That's a great question, and a couple of people have asked that recently. I think it might be time for a new edition of the book,
right.
Actually. They have done some things in it. In fact, one of the first things they did, which we had recommended in that book, was to end the court challenges program. You may remember that, Joseph. It was a fairly controversial measure at the time. But they did do that, and they've also... And I'm not going to say they did it because of our book. I mean, I think they were just thinking these things
right.
independently of what we said. They adopted a much more positive tone in the 2006 and 2008 campaigns. They lost it at the beginning of this campaign, but got it back towards the end. In order for conservatives to do well, I think they need to be the optimistic and the patriotic and the happy, hopeful party. You know, they can't be always negative and looking down on the country and, you know, pessimistic about the future. So Harper's done that, which was recommended in the book. Some of the things that they haven't done that I wish they would is, for example, how to deal with Quebec. We had a whole chapter in the book about Quebec and how important it was to grow conservatism in Quebec. And I think that the Tories under Harper have sort of come up short there. They've made great efforts at various points, but they keep changing their mind. You know, sometimes they seem really interested in building up Quebec, and then other times they just give up. And I think this campaign was an example of the latter, where they just didn't put in the resources and effort necessary. So they have adopted a bunch of things from the book, and I think it's probably just because they were thinking the same thing as us. But there's others that they could probably do a little better.
But Harper didn't need Quebec to win a majority. I mean, we saw that last night. So, does that bode well for Quebec?
Well, I don't know if it bodes well for Quebec or not. It doesn't bode well for national unity, because you do have the possibility now, and especially after the next seat redistribution, which will definitely be passed now that the Tories are in a majority government, that will allocate even more seats to Ontario and BC and Alberta. So you can absolutely form a majority now without Quebec. Whether that's good or bad, well, I think it's bad, because you want to have representation from all parts of the country. But, you know, I don't think there's much more to say than that. He's won 6 seats from Quebec. It's better than 5 or better than 0, but it's not as much as would have been hoped for.
Does Maxime Bernier return to cabinet now?
I think so, and I hope so. I think he deserves to come back. It's clear that the voters of his constituency have forgiven him for his past transgressions. And in the Westminster system, if you get a slap on the wrist and you return to the voters and they endorse you again, then you're forgiven. So I think he deserves to go back. He's a very talented public official and a good orator, and I think good for conservatism. So I really do hope he comes back into cabinet.
Finally, one of the things that you and Tesha talk about in the book was building a conservative infrastructure that included a presence on television.
Yes.
Like a network, say. We have the Sun News Network now. What do you make of that after a couple of weeks?
I've been on it a couple of times, and I think I think they have the big picture right. Keep in mind, they're only in their third week, so they're still probably fine-tuning things. But I think they have the big picture right, and that they're unabashedly patriotic and small C conservative in their editorial views, very much like the Sun newspaper chain. I think there's probably a few things around the edges that need tweaking a bit, but they'll figure that out. They don't need me to tell them that. And I really hope that conservatives around the country, conservatives with a small c, that is, rally around Sun, support Sun, and subscribe to it, because it's one of the best chances we've ever had to create some conservative media in the country. And we need to throw our weight behind it and support them in this project, because it's not easy.
You're good to do this, Adam. I appreciate your time today. I hope to have you on again, and perhaps not in another 6 years.
Anytime, Joseph. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Thanks very much. The websites for more, difala.com and mrcnr.net. Adam Difala on the line from Montreal. In Vancouver, I'm Joseph Planta.